Good morning. We're here on Radio Tacoma. I am taping this in my English 102 class here at TCC, and we have a guest with us. My English class is English, but taught through the lens of climate change and sustainability. And one of the issues that we've talked about is how do you become more engaged in local government, and in particular, today we're going to talk about state government. And so one of our members, Rachel Paradiso, invited a friend of hers, Ezra Eichmeier, who is a lobbyist in Olympia. So Ezra is with Sunrise Consulting, okay. And he's going to talk to us today a little bit about how he got into lobbying, the kinds of issues he lobbies for, and some of the businesses he has worked with and some of the nonprofits he's worked with, some of maybe the pitfalls he's found, ways to talk to other people who don't necessarily share your worldview about some of the issues. So, okay, so Ezra, why don't we start out with how you got into lobbying?
Well, I developed awareness about our environmental problems about the age of like 18, 19. Like in a really, really, really deep fundamental way. And of course, the first thing I did is have a major panic attack because I could tell that we were facing an existential crisis and that my parents' generation, at least at that time, was not taking it seriously and they were the ones in power. So started with the panic attack. I was even on antidepressants for a little while to stop having panic attacks, literally. And then one day I realized like I needed to step up and and change my life course and my plans to position myself to do whatever I could with my life to actually be part of the solution, work towards changes. So I come from a political family. I grew up knowing a lot of politicians. I also come from a business family, so I understand fundamentally. I was around people with power and influence, and literally my entire life. My father was also state representative for a number of years from Mason County. So I basically just had a little spiritual moment where I said, whatever higher power is out there, I'm pledging the rest of my life to doing what I can to protect the biosphere. And that was 27 years ago-ish. So I'm 27 years in on my mission. It's going okay. Too many weeks later, I found a little flyer I was going to University of Washington at the time. I found one of those little flyers with the phone numbers. Hey, get a job to save the environment. And I'm riding around my bike. I'm like, okay, cool. So I called it. And it was the worst job that you can have. It's almost as bad as working retail at a fast food joint. The job was going door to door and asking strangers for money for a nonprofit group that they had never heard about before. So it was emotionally one of the most difficult jobs I ever did. I'm a very sensitive person, but I also recover quickly from hurt feelings. So I ended up actually thriving in the job, despite all the nights I came back in tears, from having doors slammed in my face or dogs sicked on me. But at the end of the day, what I did, it was like boot camp for being an activist and for communicating with people in a way that is geared towards getting them to do something that you want. And because I had about a few minutes to introduce myself, win the person's trust, tell them about the issue I was working on, which was to protect unlogged areas in the national forest, and then to convince them to write me a check or give me some cash. Or on occasion when I was talking to some people without either, I'd convince them to give me a little weed, like that helped. So I eventually, by the age of 21, I became the director for the program, so it was my job to not only go out and raise a lot of money in the field, but also then to hire people, train them how to do it, manage my crew, manage the logistics, be the emotional, therapist for people when they came back, feeling, really emotional from doing the job in the field. And what that did is it prepared me essentially for having the communication skills to go on to have a multi-decade career in politics. Initially, I was working in elections and different local advocacy. I've always been somebody who looks at things from multiple perspectives. I don't like to get caught into groupthink. I don't like belonging to a political party or to any one group. I didn't even really get along that well with the other environmentalists because they get into these really narrow ways of thinking, and the moment you go outside of that, they start treating you bad. And one thing that I am above all else is fiercely independent. So I became a rogue agent on the environment. And I moved out to Jefferson County because I'm a little more of a mountain person. I like to be in nature. I like to garden. I like having to worry about cougars eating my kids rather than like what the neighbors are up to. So I went out to Jefferson County to raise a family, and I started working for a gravel mining company. I got offered a job through a family connection to do some local advocacy for a project where they wanted to be able to build a pier and a whole thing to transport gravel by water instead of barge, and also locate a huge gravel mine in an area where it would have the least environmental impact compared to all the other alternatives on the West Coast. And so considering that there was no campaign to stop the use of gravel mining, you know, instead of sticking with the nonprofit environmental groups that were just, you know, taking kind of an ideological position, I thought about the cost-benefit current paradigm versus what would the paradigm be if this project went through. And the project going through represented a huge reduction in the environmental cost for society's use for gravel. It also opened the doorway to get all the sand and gravel available by barge to go repair a lot of the nearshore environment damage that's happened in the Puget Sound area. Whenever you see, you know, a bulkhead or the hard armoring of a shoreline, that usually has the effect of ruining the nearshore environment. It causes wave energy to bounce back, and it washes out the sand that the eelgrass needs, and then the eelgrass goes away. And along with that goes the food source for all the feeder fish, the salmon on the way out to the ocean. So most of our eelgrass beds are in a state of decline in the broader Puget Sound or Washington area and all our inland, you know, waters. So I bucked the trend. I lost personal friends over my decision, but you know, I looked at what the best course was. I got involved with the gravel mining company from the environmental community, turning around then and fighting against some of the very environmental advocates I had been on the same side of in the past on issues of not logging old growth forest. Then that company decided that I would be a good lobbyist. Now, keep in mind, at the time I was long hair, spiritual, you know, kind of pagan, hippie, back to the earth kind of guy, you know, like long. Sometimes like you'd be shocked if you saw me even wearing shoes because I'd be walking around barefoot. I mean, stereotypical kind of like radical lefty looking hippie activist, right? And somehow this guy saw in me that I would be a good suit and tie lobbyist in Olympia. So he said, look, we need to start working at the state level, and so we want you to go down to Olympia, start learning how to be a lobbyist, we'll pay you, and we want you to work on a few issues just to get started. They're not even anything that necessarily directly affect our business. So I went down, my first question was, do I have to wear a suit? And yes, the answer was yes, I needed to buy a suit and start doing my hair nice and everything else. And so I went and I found out that there were these bills that had just been introduced that were going to put some pilot programs in place for experimenting with biofuels. This was in 2003. And so I ended up, on behalf of a gravel mining company, jumping in, and because they were in favor of also, you know, improving their environmental impact, you know, maybe switching their fleets to biofuels, things like that. So there was a nexus between who I was working for and the issue. So I helped get these bills passed that set up pilot programs that started using biodiesel in our school buses, set up some incentives for ethanol and others. And so that was a cool experience that got me into basically legislative lobbying in Olympia. It was just seeing an opportunity, seeing a door open, letting go of ideological positions and my connections to belonging to a group to go enter a new world where I knew I could infiltrate and get more and more influence over the years. So I basically became a business contract lobbyist where I work for different business entities representing them to the state legislature. And the way that developed was over the years, you know, I did some stuff just for money and didn't really have an effect on the environment or what have you. But what I did was I presented myself as a businessman to legislators, and believe it or not, that allowed me to have more effective environmental advocacy with legislators because of how they saw me. They didn't see me as one of the radical leftists or one of the nonprofit ideologues from the environmental community. They saw me as a business guy and working on business issues most of the time. So I could sit down with, you know, some of the most right-wing staunch Republicans and make fun of the environmental groups with them, but then say, look, Senator, okay, sometimes they're full of shit, no doubt. But, and look, they've attacked me publicly as well, so like I get it, and I'm a country guy. But, you know, on the issue of climate change, you've got to understand that X, Y, and Z are very real, and what we need to see from your caucus, from the Republicans, is your own plan to deal with it. Like we need to take this issue seriously. I agree with you, what the liberals are proposing isn't necessarily the best thing, but we need you to get on board with, you know, do your own thing. So from that perspective, I was able to do, have effect on a number of different issues over the years. So what I would do is, what I've done for the last 20 years now since I've been a lobbyist, is work for different business groups mostly, and sometimes also like I work for midwives or acupuncturists or different organizations.
Cannabis, you say?
Oh yes, and then I became the face of the cannabis industry in Olympia 12 years ago and took on that industry. Talk about pitfalls. Mm-hmm. So I was the first Washington lobbyist to represent the cannabis industry before 502 even passed. And there was still this huge stigma around it. And so I lost all of my other clients. It bankrupted me to have taken on the cannabis industry at that time because nobody wanted to be associated with weed, especially this long-haired lobbyist.
What year was that?
2011.
Wow.
Yeah, 2010 was when I got involved. In 2011 was the first legislative session. I got a big bill through trying to normalize the cannabis industry on the medical side. Major pitfall, bankrupted me. I lost my property, I lost my car. It was basically a start over thing for me. But I've got a lot of grit, and I accept the consequences of my decisions. So I just reinvented myself and kind of rolled with that. And then I decided to get into the cannabis industry. I decided to use the cannabis industry as a business foundation for me to start a company and be able to get kind of more or less passive income if it worked in the future, so I could have economic foundation that would give me the freedom to go work on other things. So it also positioned me to do some cool stuff. So later on, a number of years later, I ended up, because I-502, the initiative that legalized cannabis in our state, did not legalize industrial hemp. Can you imagine the public passing something that makes it legal for you to smoke weed now? But no, you still can't grow this for making homes and car doors and plastics and clothing and everything else. Are you kidding me? So I just kind of, did my thing. I pulled together like the most liberal Democrat and the most conservative Republican and got them to co-sponsor a bill. I put the bill together. I brought the right players to the table, the different universities and what have you, the different trade groups. And I got a bill through that finally legalized industrial hemp. Nobody paid me to do that. I did that for my kids. Because let's face it, like without the use, massive global use of industrial hemp, there's no way we're going to clean up our environmental impact.
Right, because that can replace wood, concrete, plastic.
Plastic, most importantly, yeah. Probably. Building materials, you could build this entire university out of hempcrete. And it would, if you did it right, you wouldn't even need heating systems anymore, really. You could light a candle in here and stay warm and it's 10 degrees out. So, yeah, hemp is a huge part of that future. And then, hemp got legalized federally, and so then, later on I ended up, just last year, finding a company out of California that produces hemp-based plastics that biodegrade in the environment. So, when you get, like, utensils and plastic bags and things that say biodegradable on them or compostable, there's kind of like a disclaimer they should put on all of it. Only if it goes to a commercial composting facility. Okay, it has to go through another industrial process to actually biodegrade. So if those products end up in the environment, there's still a huge threat to the environment. Like this isn't something that's just gonna turn back into dirt if it ends up in the forest. So I found a company finally producing bio-based plastics that will then biodegrade in 6 months in the environment. So I hounded them. I reached out to them, I called them, I sent them proposals, and I finally got them to hire me as their national political director. So now I'm working on, this is kind of like now phase three, working on getting national standards set up to recognize the types of plastics with a certified label that says home compostable, so you know you can throw this in your backyard compost and it'll turn back into dirt. Okay, and it'll apply to paper packaging and a number of other, any sort of single-use stuff item that's not contaminated with petroleum and that is made from plants and that does not require industrial process to biodegrade can qualify for this label. And what that does is then set the stage for us to start in massive. Now you can't repeat this publicly. This is part secret. I'm saying it on radio. I'm kidding. This then sets the stage for us, for industries to, my industry, I'll call it, to start going after the petroleum plastics market share in the world, to start replacing those petroleum plastics with hemp and other bio-based plastics. So, that was kind of a long story, but the foundation for all of that, everything that we've accomplished in that little story, started with the basic communication skills of being able to win somebody over in just a couple of minutes, and being able to influence them to do something. So, there are two types of people who are out advocating for things in the world. They're what I call ideologues. They're people who just want to hear themselves talking and saying the right thing to the public or to people in power or what have you. They don't care if they're being effective. They don't care if they're winning. They don't care if they're actually influencing the other person. They don't even care if they're like 100% sticking to the truth of things. Because we all know reality is a very nuanced thing and as rarely as black and white as people talk about it in the political world, right? So if you're really going to hold your integrity, you've got to stick to the truth, which sometimes means standing on your own. And that shit is scary. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat that. Even for people like somebody like me, sometimes I have my moments of terror, like, oh, I'm standing alone on all this, but I know I'm right. So I'm sticking to my guns. Eventually, it kind of pays off, but not until after you've been, attacked and belittled and lost friends and all the other stuff. So, there's a price to pay for being truthful in this society. We love our fantasies and our narratives. Especially now, like with how divided people are on the left and right bullshit, right? And it is bullshit, let me say, because that's not where our divide should really be in this country. It should be between those who want a clean environment in the future and those who don't. That is the divide that I believe in, not left versus right or any cultural differences or, whatever. Like, come on. So, the communication side, on the flip side, you have the other type of person who wants to be effective and wants to win. And so, if you want to be advocates for anything, then one, be open-minded, listen to people, do your research, and make sure that you're on the side of the truth, and that you have the truth behind you. That's the first thing. Have integrity with everything you do, no matter what you're advocating for. And then two, communicate to win. Communicate to influence the other person, and that kind of comes around to then, the question of, how do you communicate with somebody who has a different worldview than you or a political view? So I'm going to just kind of speak to that in the context of being an advocate in Olympia or an advocate to some sort of government official, okay? And let's take the stereotypical left and right. So if I want to talk about bioplastics and saving the environment, if I'm talking to a liberal, I'm more, considering, like, assuming that they're kind of a stereotypical, liberal, I'm just going to simplify things for the sake of presentation here, then I'm going to talk a little bit more about the broader vision. Like, we're going to use this tool to go after the petroleum industry, we're going to use this tool to, like, clean up, have a cleaner future for our kids, and speak more ideologically and more in like broader vision and everything else. Now, as a businessman, and I'm also an entrepreneur, I've started a number of businesses in my years, if I'm talking to a more conservative or somebody who comes from the business world, I'm going to talk about saving money and having business be accountable. So I'm actually more of like a independent libertarian type. I believe that we're way too controlling and authoritarian of a society from the left and right, honestly. Different directions, and I believe that our environment has got to be our top priority. If we don't have a clean planet, like, what else matters, right? We're toast. So just logically, you can't say there's anything more important than our biosphere. Unless you're okay with the annihilation of most of the life as we know it and the eventual extinction of the human species. If you're okay with that, okay. There are other priorities other than the environment. But if that's not your thing, if you think that it would be cool for life to continue for a couple billion more years till the star explode, our star explodes, well, then we got to prioritize the biosphere, right? So, but with the, you know, with the more business-minded folks, I'm going to talk about cost savings. I'm going to talk about business opportunities. So, for example, there's this big legislation I'll talk about later in more detail that would set up the, it was called a producer responsibility organization, where the producers and distributors of single-use items, especially packaging, plastics, bottles and cans and everything else, they are going to be responsible for the cost of recovering that and recycling it. And they're not happy about that, but I'm going to tell you, that bill is moving through the legislature and it's probably going to pass. It's the trend that's happening across the country of saying, hey, we can't just sell this stuff out into the world, have it end up in the oceans and say, oh, well, it's the fault of the consumer. Or even just as bad, what they've been doing with recycling programs and others is putting the cost of cleanup for their products on the public and on the government. Now, I'm sorry, but the most right-wing Republicans that I talk to in Olympia don't believe that that's right. They don't believe in private industry sloughing the cost of the consequence of their business onto the taxpayers. So I talk about that aspect. I'm like, look, if we set up these programs that encourage companies to start using truly biodegradable products for single-use stuff, it's going to save them the cost of having to reclaim all of that, because people now will be able to put that stuff in their backyard compost. Okay, so this is a cost saving. It's a way for business, without being told they have to. Okay, like, because they hate when the conservatives generally hate when you come and put a regulation that tells a business they have to do something. All right, that really rubs them the wrong way. And on occasion, I agree with them. Sometimes, like in this state, we take regulation way too far in the wrong direction. In this instance, I don't think they should be allowed to pollute the environment. I don't care how we do it, how we fix that. But if I talk about setting up alternative carrot-based programs and certifications that can save businesses money and that give an alternative for an industry to just make a different choice to and have an economic incentive then to clean up their own environmental impact without having a regulation shoved at them from government, that's their language. Now, when I'm talking to people, I'm representing my bioplastics company, not some hippie nonprofit environmental group, right? Like, I'm there as a businessman with a profit motive, with ambitions to make millions of dollars for me and my family so I can buy land and go live in the mountains again and be a hermit. As a capitalist. But a capitalist saying they've got to be responsible, and they really eat up too when I say, the cost of cleaning up their own problems should be on the businesses, not on the taxpayers. Then they're like, yes, you're right. We should got to change this. So for that reason, there's a tremendous amount of Republican support for these bills moving through the process. And I'm helping move the bill along and also helping, and also changing this legislation as it moves to make sure that it directs the state to set up a certification and labeling program to differentiate on the labeling to the public the difference between, generally compostable in a commercial facility versus home compostable, hey, you can take this and throw it in your backyard compost. The first thing in being an advocate is as best that you're able to read the room and know your audience. Like, who are you talking to? What's their background? What sorts of things are going to motivate them? And then don't lie. Don't change the truth. Just speak about different aspects of the truth based on what you know they're interested in. Like, I never lie to legislators. I know everybody thinks lobbyists are just liars. Hey, we're not attorneys. Come on. But the reality is, if you get caught lying to legislators, then you lose your trust. All you really have is your trust. Otherwise, they don't have to talk to you. I don't have any actual power in Olympia. All I have is a smiling face, and I hope that people like me and will want to talk to me, so that I can actually get my foot in the door to have some influence, right? But do I change? If this is all the truth, but the liberals are most influenced by this part of the truth, and the conservatives this part, and other people, kind of across the spectrum, other parts. Well, I'm going to try to speak to that person based on where they're coming from. So, with that said, and I know you wanted to have some more questions. Sorry, I've talked longer, but what I'm going to offer to you all is, if you want some real world experience on this, if you all put together a little student lobby group, I will be your mentor. You don't have to pay me. Okay, that's cool. I'm not trying to get your money. And I would invite you to come work on one of the environmental bills that's actually making its way through the legislative process as we speak. So this quarter is actually perfect timing where you could have real-world influence and get real-world training speaking to legislators. So I'll leave a few cards before we go. Just wanted to put that out there. I'll help you figure out what bill would be best to work on. I'm biased, but I'll give you some alternatives. But you have to do the work to organize yourselves, be motivated and everything else, and then I will be your mentor and give you, you know, strategic advice. So,
okay.
Questions?
Yes, questions for Ezra. Tyler, can you just come up a little closer so that the recorder will pick it up? By the way, what's the number of the bill that you're talking about with hemp, I think? Or no, bioplastics.
Well, it's not a bioplastics bill, but the bill number is HB1131.
And we'll talk a little bit about how to comment on those bills, too.
Yeah, and even show up and speak directly to legislators.
HB1131.
And what it does is it sets up what's called a producer responsibility organization, where the people selling single-use stuff to the public are responsible for paying for the systems to collect it and be sure that... And then it also forces them to use... certain amount of, you know, post-consumer recycled content, blah, blah, blah.
Yes, and you can go on the, I'm not exactly sure what the website is. Leg.wa.gov. Okay, so anybody listening can do this too.
www.leg.wa.gov.
And then you'll find
and the places. And then on the left, you'll see a little link that says bill information. You click that, and then you go put that number in, and it'll take you to the bill history, the changes it's gone through.
Okay. HB 1131. Uh-huh. Okay. And up until what time, do you know?
Right now, it's waiting for a vote in the House. So it started in the House of Representatives. It's waiting for a vote of the entire body of representatives.
Okay. All right.
And so we'll know whether it's going to pass for sure or not in the next, like, 5 weeks, really.
Okay, so they can go in over the next few weeks and do this.
Sooner the better, though.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah, we'll get this posted by this weekend.
Okay.
Definitely. Let's see, Tyler, come on up.
The thing with the hemp, you're planning on making that a federal thing, right?
So I'm the national political director for my bioplastics company. I also have a lobbyist that works under me in D.C., work in Congress. So there's this other thing called the Farm Bill. That passes every 5 years in D.C. that provides subsidies for food and farmers and everything else. So we're going to be working on the Farm Bill to get language that would give a directive towards the U.S. Department of Agriculture to set up a testing and labeling standard about home composting on this labeling thing to make that idea national. I'm also working on it here at the state level. It's not about hemp specific, though. Our company is, the company I represent is making hemp-based plastics. But the hemp farming and all of that, that's good to go. It doesn't really need any changes in law anymore. Now it's all about kind of getting laws and things that favor products made from hemp to help the industry move along and grow faster.
Okay, so it's legal to produce and manufacture like all hemp materials? Because that was kind of...
Everywhere, weird. Yeah.
Okay, because that, for some reason, I was under the assumption that since weed isn't federally legal, that there will be some issues like... growing it and manufacturing like hemp-based products in certain states and stuff like that?
There was until 2018.
Okay.
And at the end of 2018, when they passed the last Farm Bill, and industrial hemp was still considered basically cannabis, yeah.
Okay.
And now at the state level, however, we got hemp legalized in Washington years before the feds did it. But now it's legal all across the country. Individual states reserve the right to still make industrial hemp illegal if they want to. Like, Idaho is still being kind of weird about this, like, because, you know, Idaho. But for the most part, in virtually every state in the country, you're free to go. It's a free market on industrial hemp.
Okay. Rachel? You're talking about the legislature or the measure about passing on the cost of recycling to the companies.
Uh-huh.
What stops the companies from passing that cost on to consumers?
And the pricing...
Okay, so I just want to reiterate the question just a little bit. Rachel is asking if companies will be asked to cover the cost of recycling their materials, what keeps them from passing that on to the consumer?
Mm-hmm. Nothing. That's exactly what they're going to do. As you know, everything that a company pays for comes out of its gross revenues, which the gross revenues represent sales to the public, right? So yeah, for sure the consumers pay for it, but the consumers are used to getting things at a certain price point. So if the companies start raising the prices, but then you know, on one sector, but then another a competitor says, well, no, we're going to keep the prices the same, then you know, the one who raised their price to pay for this new regulation is going to lose market share. So there's always incentive to in the market to bring prices back down. But you know what, as opposed to having like you know taxpayers do it through government or whatever, it's just because it also then incentivizes the companies to get more streamlined and clean up their own act and to produce less crap that's going to be a problem for the environment in the first place. So it'll have the effect of reducing the amount of packaging being used. And then my amendments to the bill about this home composting thing are going to give them further incentive to make sure that the packaging that they do send out is biodegradable in the environment and your backyard compost. Because if you go through it in your backyard, they don't have to pay to collect it again, right? And so that's going to apply to paper packaging, to you know, cardboard, to bioplastics, you name it. So not just the product that I represent, but to the whole spectrum of single-use stuff.
Like across the country, I mean, like corporations, like all the single-use bottles and stuff out there. You're talking about like rod.
Yeah, and anything that's bio-based. So plastic bottles can be bio-based. There's no reason we need petroleum plastics for that anymore. But you know, glass bottles obviously is a completely different story. You don't want to put that in your backyard compost. And so they're going to have, you know, those like in Oregon where you have like the deposits, like that's coming for cans and bottles because those have to be dealt with in more of a recycling situation. But other stuff that, you know, like your packaging or you know, your water bottles, your disposable cutlery, your pizza boxes, you name it, a lot of that stuff is currently contaminated with tape, non-bio-based inks, you know, different petroleum stuff that make it actually difficult to recycle but impossible to compost because it's mixed in with petroleum. You don't put that stuff in your dirt.
if they're going to start taking on the cost of, like, the recycling and taking care of, you know, their waste, does that mean that, like, down the road when we're paying for recycling services and stuff, is that going to lower? Or, I mean, because where are we going to see it? I mean, obviously, it's going to be seen in terms of they're going to start producing less waste and, you know, switch over to something biodegradable. But in the meantime, are we going to have, like, lower recycling bills or something like that? I mean, if they're paying more?
That's a good question. I don't have the answer to that one. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to have to. I'm not quite as much of an expert on the recycling side of things.
Yeah.
I'm more about setting the stage for kind of flipping our society into the next paradigm.
Like getting the policy in place.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. And recycling is notorious now for not actually working. A lot of the things that they say are recyclable do not end up being recycled.
Yes, a lot of plastics.
A very low percentage. It's very discouraging. So we have got to get, you're right, plastics have got to be made from something else.
The vision that I have, that I'm pushing for at the national and state levels, and I'll be working in California and New York and other states on this as well, I'll be hiring lobbyists all over the country, is for us to get to a point where the stuff that we manufacture and consume, for the most part, is not a danger to the environment if and when it ends up there.
Yeah.
So, and let's be frank. Glass bottles, aluminum cans, they're not actually bad for the environment when they end up there. They're ugly, they're dangerous if you step on them and other things, but those aren't a huge concern. So I'm not too worried about bottles and cans. Like I'm going to let that industry and that side of things, you know, deal with their stuff. But plastics or paper mixed with plastics, petroleum plastics and microplastics in the ocean, you know, and you know, having Roundup in everybody's house, like to, you know, chemicals that are toxic that you just spray at your home just to kill the weeds that you don't like, which are actually usually the edible plants trying to compete with your grass, right? So, you know, we've got to clean up our act on that front. People are not going to give up consumerism. Like we have 8 billion people in the world who all want to live more and more like Americans. Okay, we just can't stop that right now. I wish I had some strategy for changing that and being more community-based and sharing and less consumerism, blah, blah, blah. It's not happening in the next decade at least, okay? And I don't know how long. So what we have to focus on doing is cleaning up the product stream and make sure that as much as possible we make sure that everything we produce is not a danger to the environment if it ends up there. Still try to keep it out of the environment and deal with it in-house, but you know, there's no reason we should have a, you know, single-use water bottle that ends up in the ocean be sitting out there breaking up down into smaller and smaller pieces, more and more danger to the biosphere over the next 500 years. Come on! Just to deliver a little bit of water. That is insanity. There's no excuse for that.
It's amazing what we've become fooled into buying. Buying water, put in plastic, which the water, the plastic then leaches into the water. Total danger to the environment, and it's water generally that was publicly owned at one point.
So, okay. But let me give you a little communication, like kind of example here. So back to it, because this is a communication class. So let's say sometimes as a lobbyist, you don't get to sit down in a meeting for a 15-minute meeting with the senator. Sometimes I have to convince them while walking down the hall with them, and I have 2 minutes. So I might say something like, hey, Senator, I just wanted to talk to you about the RAP Act, they're calling it, you know, House Bill 1131. I want to add an amendment to clarify something that's very important for industry and for homeowners alike. You know the plastic cutlery that says, you know, biodegradable on it? Well, the other day I was listening to the conversation with people who said that they stuck that in their backyard compost and 3 years later it was still hadn't biodegraded. And that brought up a great point that the consumers don't understand the difference between something that's compostable or biodegradable that must go to a commercial facility to biodegrade versus something they can actually put in their backyard compost. So my amendment language would basically direct the Department of Ecology to come up with a new testing and labeling standard that would differentiate products that can be thrown in the backyard compost versus having to be collected for commercial composting in the future. That gives a lower cost alternative for companies producing the stuff. And it clarifies things for the homeowner so they're not as confused by by this labeling. What do you think? Can you support that amendment? Okay.
Okay.
Oh, what was that? 75 seconds?
Yeah.
90 seconds or less?
Right? Yep.
So, being able to, like, distill something down, speak to them from their perspective, if you can add even a little story. So when I first testified on this bill in public, I told that story about how, and it was a true story, I overheard people talking about, I took this, so it says compostable, so I threw it in my compost and it sat there for 3 years and did nothing. That was a real story, but that story stuck in people's minds, so I had legislators repeating that story back to me after I testified in public with it. And that kind of won the day for a lot of people on supporting a bill, a story about overhearing some people complain.
So HB 1131 is also known as the RAP Act.
Correct.
Ah, yes, I just commented on the RAP Act.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. WRAP.
Yes.
RAP Act.
Yes.
Yes, I got a little text from one of the groups.
Good.
About that.
Yeah, good.
Yes, you can also join different groups and they'll send you bills that are important to the environment. I'm part of 350 WA, mm-hmm. And they, that's 350 WA, 350 Washington. And they send me emails and texts about certain bills that I might be interested, not only environmental bills, but housing bills also, those sorts of things. So any other questions for Ezra today?
Okay, ask me anything.
Yes,
anybody? I'm the least filtered person that you'll talk to from Olympia.
Anybody who would be interested in talking to him about being a lobbyist, Gerard?
So I'm going to leave a little pile of cards here. If you all decide that you want to put together like a little you know, lobby group, it's going to be on you to reach out to me. There's my personal contact information on the cards.
They're going to be working on podcasts, which will also air on Radio Tacoma for the next 2 weeks, and we come to the end of the quarter.
Cool.
But I might suggest that a group like maybe the one that Gerard's going to be in. I don't know why, you just seem like you'd make a really good lobbyist. that they might work on this, on the idea of lobbying and how to put together it. Well, we'll see.
Cool. Yeah, now's the time. Like, real world stuff's happening right now. So this isn't even practice run. This is like, go have real influence on something that is going to have a huge impact on your future.
Yeah.
Right now.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Ezra.
You're very welcome. Thanks for checking us out. Good to see you. So there you have it. I'll look forward to hearing from you all. When you're ready to become a junior lobbyist, then I get to take credit for being your mentor.
Yeah, great. Okay. We're signing off from Radio Tacoma. And if you'd like to hear this, you can listen also on our archive at radiotacoma.org.